If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name's Kenny McIntosh, joined as always when we talk about Power Slam related topics, even though we never actually talk about the actual move of a Power Slam, but he is here nonetheless. It's Finn Martin. Hi Finn, how are you?
Oh, very well. Or indeed, we never really talk about Power Slam related topics on the main podcast either.
No, so I'm just an absolute sham of a lie. That's all I am. Good start to my reputation. How are you this week?
I'm very well, Kenny. Very well indeed. Yeah, I wrote another What's Going Down for Inside the Ropes Patreon, so I was really pleased to submit that for reasons which I'm sure we'll get to when we talk about Raw a little later. So yeah, I've had a good week. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I'm worried about you because there's not been any DIY related stories in about a month. Have you decided to put the tools down for a few weeks and take a break?
Well, it's funny you should mention. I re-grouted part of the bathroom yesterday. Nothing better than nice white grout, Kenny. there's always stuff going on. But I think people probably tune into this podcast, even though they don't tune into it. That's more like listening to a radio show. I'm sure people listen to this podcast to hear us talking about pro wrestling, not re-grouting bathrooms.
Well, I mean, it's a shame because I don't think we give enough time to grout here on the podcast. So there's a lot of stuff to get into, but I guess the first thing we should quickly talk about is there's been speculation and a lot of WWE stars asking for the release, and the two that have come to light is The Revival, apparently, right after they came backstage from their match on Raw, asked for the release from the company. And Mike and Maria Kanellis, who are now on 205 Live, used to be on SmackDown, they've also asked for the release. So what do you make of it? I mean, is this all AEW related, that the timing, or do you think people are just getting fed up with their positions? And do you see this becoming the beginning of more people asking for them?
Yeah, I would say that this is the likelihood of more people asking for releases, more people who are frustrated with their positions and really have despair about their prospects in the company. Now there's a potential rival company that might be willing to offer them decent money, you know, good schedule, you know, a real national profile. I think it is going to motivate more people to do that because prior, I mean, obviously we had Impact Wrestling, but that hasn't been a serious alternative for quite a few years. As everyone knows, now it appears that we're going to have a serious alternative that's going to compete in some way, not obviously for world domination along with against WWE's, but it's going to be some form of real competition for WWE. Then I would think the more frustrated people who are currently under contract to WWE will seek to leave the company. I mean, for The Revival, you can't blame them. I mean, it's been stop-start with them. They're going nowhere. They're in this never-ending, interminable feud with Lucha House Party, which is getting them nowhere. I mean, the Bennetts, I mean, if you were to poll 100 WWE fans, I reckon probably 70 of them would probably say, who are the Bennetts and do they still work for the company? So, I mean, when did the Bennetts come back? It wasn't last summer. Was it the summer 17?
I think it was. I think it was summer 17, and then Mike Kanellis went into rehab not long after they came back, I think.
So. Okay. But, I mean, Maria had a baby, so, I mean, she wasn't going to be working then. But, I mean, Mike Bennett has done basically nothing in the company. So, you know, he's at this point in his career where to continue to work for WWE is only reinforcing the notion that he's a nobody. So if he thinks there's an escape route and a company that might use him and make him a star, then I can't say I blame him for attempting to go down that route and to, you know, in an effort to save his career, basically. What do you make of it, Kenny?
Yeah, I mean, the Revival one, I mean, I don't think they're going to get their release. I don't know when their contracts are up. I mean, I heard that the Revival's contracts were up this year at some point. So I guess if the company say no, they can just work it out. Because, I mean, we saw from the Neville situation, the worst thing you can do is sort of like just go home because they will just extend your contract. Which, you know, I mean, I know it's ruthless, but it is a business. And if the Revival are a team that they think could go and make a difference for someone else, they obviously don't want to let that happen until they've ran out of their contract. But yeah, I think the Mike Kanellis one's interesting. He's kind of has to bet on himself here because there was a statistic that he's only had like 4 matches on SmackDown since he came to the company in June 2017.
Yeah.
Which is a pretty damning statistic, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, from the start, you could see that they didn't believe in him. They didn't think that he was going to be a player in the company. So, I mean, it was really set up to fail. I don't know whether he would have got over had he been given the chance. Probably not. I don't think he was really up to WWE standards, frankly. So, I mean, whatever happened, I don't think he was going to make it. But had he at least been given the chance, he could have looked back and he could have said, well, they gave me the chance and, you know, I didn't get over. And, you know, that way you can rationalize it more, the fact that you haven't been used. The fact that you haven't been pushed can be related to the reaction to you when you were first pushed. So, I mean, you know, it's easier, I think, to accept if they've given you the chance and you haven't made it rather than not giving you the chance at all. As for the Revival, I mean, to me, it's like, you know, you were just mentioned there about Neville. I mean, in many ways, Kenny, if you're not happy in WWE and you feel that they're using you in a way that's not flattering to your career and is potentially doing irreparable damage to your reputation, and you can afford to go home, then I can absolutely understand why a wrestler would do that. A lot of them, of course, can't. But, I mean, Neville was obviously in the position where he could. Because you're thinking, well, hold on a minute. I'm still only this age. I could have 8, 9, 10 good years left. I would rather take a year off rather than spending a year being presented as something that I'm not, or as a character that is going to do me harm long term. I'd rather just disappear, which by leaving the national stage and then coming back, it's sort of, you know, you almost have like a clean slate again. You know, it just wipes away a lot of those memories. So I do understand why people do that if they're in a position in life where they can afford to do so. So sometimes I don't think it's such a bad career move.
But I guess, you know, it's all well to do with, I mean, Neville was lucky in the sense that they did let him go.
Yeah.
They could have kept it going. Because how long did they keep Rey Mysterio the last time? Did they not? Oh. They kept him for a long time.
Yeah, it was early, was it about January of 14 that he stepped off?
The last match he had was the night after WrestleMania 30, I think.
Or was
it? When he got jobbed out to Wade Barrett.
That's right, yeah, that's right. I thought it was the night after Royal Rumble. So, I mean, yeah, night after WrestleMania. So, I mean, I can't quite remember how long he was in limbo for, but, I mean, for him, I think long-term it probably was beneficial. I mean, his career, his run was up in WWE. He was being presented as a face and people were booing him. So he knew this was very bad for him long-term. And look at the reaction he received on SmackDown this week and the reaction he's received in most of his matches since he returned. So I think long-term it was the right move for him. You know, you've got to have faith. You know, you've got to have faith in your career. And sometimes I think a lot of wrestlers just don't take charge of their careers and don't have the courage to say, no, this is not good for me right now. So I'm going to do this and I'm going to believe in myself. It's that whole line of, yes, I bet on myself and I won. You know, the Cody Rhodes thing, the Drew McIntyre, Drew Galloway thing. So I think more wrestlers should do that.
Is the WWE's main roster, you know, the Raw and SmackDown, are there just too many people in some ways that like unless you are kind of an established player or someone that they, you know, like a Corbin or a Mahal, who for whatever reason they like, that, like, you know, it's a lot more of a risk to be a main roster guy in WWE than it used to be, because you're not any more guaranteed a push, really. You know, you can be floundering. I mean, look at a guy like Bray Wyatt, who, you know, was a WWE champion two years ago?
Yeah, 2017, yeah, that's right. Defended against Orton, didn't he, at WrestleMania that year?
Yeah, WrestleMania 33, and now, you know, he went off TV last summer. He's been nowhere to be seen since. He's not injured. You know, years ago, it would have seemed baffling that a guy like Bray Wyatt, who, you know, was a star, has just been not used, not on TV, with no real explanation.
I think the problem, Kenny, is that there's not enough turnover of talent anymore, in that people are brought up to the main roster, and then they'll have maybe a little bit of a push, won't get over, then they'll be ignored for a while, then they might get a match here and there. I mean, look at No Way Jose, a classic example of a guy that I think he was brought in after WrestleMania last year. I believe that's correct.
He was the night after WrestleMania.
Yeah. So, I mean, he had a little push there as, you know, an entertaining sort of mid-card character. They very quickly lost interest in him. I mean, if you go back and watch, I mean, to me, he was not NXT title material, but I thought he was a really good performer in NXT. And I thought he was a guy that could have gone a lot further than he has done on the main roster. But they lost interest in him very quickly. So you look at a guy like that, what are his long-term prospects in WWE? And we're not even 1 year into his main roster career. And it's hard for me to see a real place for him in the company. So I think what happens in WWE is you'll get guys like that who come in, the company will give up on them very quickly, and then they're just sort of on the roster. They might appear on main event, they'll do house shows, but the careers won't really go anywhere. And they may be in that position for literally years. You know, and if they've been on the main roster for 3 years and haven't really done anything, then firstly, what have they achieved? And secondly, what do they do next? I mean, if they go back to the indie circuit, they're not really going to have a whole lot of pull there as indie draw, because they weren't featured as a WWE star. So I think on the main roster, there should be a lot more turnover of talent. And I think talent who aren't being used on the main roster should be sent back to NXT, or should do other things. You should, or maybe sent to SmackDown, or at least be given a chance to succeed. I think there should be more movement between Raw and SmackDown, more movement between brands overall, just so talent aren't left to languish. I think that's the big problem. There's just so much stagnation of talent, rather than trying to find a way to maximize the talent that is there.
Yeah, and you know, a guy like Jack Swagger is a perfect example of he kind of stayed too long. And they didn't do anything with him for maybe the last 2 years of his career. And, you know, he went to the Indies and nothing really happened.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, let's delve into Raw, because Raw was a pretty eventful episode this week. So we're going to kind of go through it in a fair amount of detail. So we open the show with a limo being shown backstage. It's Vince McMahon coming out the car. Comes out, points at a couple of spots of dirt in the window, which the driver has to wipe away. Classic Vince. Braun Strowman comes out to the ring. He says that he doesn't have any type of wrap or brace in his elbow. He said Brock Lesnar would never admit it, but he's always been afraid of him. He says, you know, hey, Beastie Boy, I hope you're watching this from your training camp, because I'm all healed up. This brings out Corbin, who basically just kind of riles Strowman up, says that, you know, he can't beat Lesnar. Corbin said that his focus would be on winning the Royal Rumble and going somewhere that Strowman never will, main event in WrestleMania. So Strowman chases Corbin backstage. Eventually, Strowman sees the Singh brothers. He tosses one of them over a catering table. And then Elias appears singing a song and tells him where Corbin is, which is in a limo. And Strowman approaches the limo that Vince arrived in, kicked off the driver's side mirror, pulled the limo driver out, tossed him over the hood of the car, and he picked up a pipe, smashed the rear window out, pulled off the door, and then he exited the other side of the door, and he runs into Vince McMahon. And when we come back from commercial break, we see Strowman attempting to put the door back on before giving up, and Vince then says, that's going to cost you $100,000. Strowman calls it a piece of crap, it isn't worth that. And Strowman then is told that his match with Lesnar is off. You're out, Vince says. And Vince walks away as Strowman tips over the limo. So this is their way of getting Strowman out of the match at Royal Rumble. And this is the reason. What did you make of the opening segment with Vince and Corbin and Strowman and ultimately the way they've taken Strowman out of the Lesnar match? And is that a good idea?
Well, yes, it is a good idea. As we've stated on previous podcasts, neither you nor I were looking forward to another Strowman versus Lesnar match, were we, Kenny? I mean, how many people were looking forward to that match? You know, how many, you know? So,
nobody.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if Braun had been in a position where you could have envisaged him winning the title and then enjoying a glorious reign, we would have been viewing the match differently. But I don't think, I would say 9 out of 10 fans would have anticipated another Strowman loss, which is something that he would have found very difficult to come back from. I think that would have been it for him as a serious performer if he'd lost to Lesnar again. So I think him being removed from that match is good for him and good for the Royal Rumble, and obviously very good for one other person as well, as we will get to in a moment. As far as the opening angle went, I just thought, I mean, at least Braun didn't forget his lines when he went out there and went through his by now tired routine on the mic. He didn't forget any of his lines, so that was redemption for him. He must have felt good about that. I thought the whole vandalization of the limo was an overreaction, him booting the wing mirror off. Why would he do that? When he dragged the limousine driver out, I didn't really get cheered when he threw the guy over the bonnet. It's just like, well, that's a bit strong. Then he smashes up the car. Vince comes out. Vince appears, rather. What are you doing? Then fines him $100,000. Cancels his match with Lesnar. And then Strowman decides to turn the limousine onto its roof. We had between the moment that he grabbed the underside of the vehicle and the moment that the car ended up on its roof, we had 10 camera shots, Kenny. I counted them. So I just think, I don't know. To me, it was nowhere near as good as the segments he was doing with The Miz and others back in 2017. It felt like a pale imitation of those angles. I felt it was like, well, we've been here before and it was better before. So, I mean, it served its purpose. I mean, overall, yeah, it was a good segment because it gave us the outcome we wanted. But I just felt like I didn't really feel like there was anything original there. And I didn't think Vince's performance was that good either. And that's partly, you know, that opinion is partly derived from the fact that you and I are reviewing 20-year-old episodes of Sunday Night Heat each week. So we're seeing Vince when he was in his prime. So, I mean, it's not, in a sense, that's not really a fair thing to say because you can't compare the Vince of 2019 with the Vince of 1999. But, you know, obviously he's 20 years older and he's not the performer that he once was. So, you know, I don't really like seeing Vince in these situations because I remember how good he once was.
Yeah, no, I get that. I thought the segment was effective enough. It wasn't original, like you say, it is a rehash of what he's done before, but I think it was effective in getting us the outcome they wanted. My only kind of, like, niggling thing would be I would have preferred if Strowman hadn't kind of, like, almost had a sour puss face to Vince when Vince was shouting at him. I would have preferred if Strowman stood up for himself a little bit more. I don't really know what you do with Strowman.
No.
And I don't mean that as a kind of a, you know, how can creative not know what to do with it? I don't know what you do with him because he's proven on the mic that he's not really a main event level player as a champion. So you have to find something else for him to do. The last 2 years at WrestleMania, he was one of the performers that people were looking forward to seeing what he was going to do. And it ended up being a big disappointment. You know, in WrestleMania 33, he was in the Battle Royal. WrestleMania 34, he tag teamed with a child. So I don't really know what his prospects are for this year. But I hope they come up with something for him. You know, it's funny that one of the best things he ever did was a Raw main event with The Big Show. You know, you kind of thought he was invincible when he was able to get that at The Big Show. But I don't know, they need to kind of figure out what they're going to do with him and what the best thing for him to be doing is, because clearly being in a title match, you know, after the No Mercy title match with Lesnar, in 2017. He needed to beat him decisively the next time they were in the ring, and they've been in the ring too many times now. And Strowman never gets one up, and I just think that ship's kind of sailed now.
Yeah, I mean, also he did the heel turn as well last year, and you know you can't really put him in a faction because he's just been in a faction with Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre. He's not really somebody who's a tag team wrestler because he doesn't get on with other people. So it's how do you put him in a tag team situation where he's properly chasing the title, you know, as a permanent tag team or a tag team that can tide him over for 6 to 9 months. So, you know, you can't turn him again because they've just done that. And that was also something that I think has diminished his connection with the audience. I think that was very noticeable here in this segment, where he did something that he's done before, and when he's done it before, it got over so much more than it did here. And I think also the segment should have had some more humour in it. That was the only thing that could have saved it. I mean, I think it was supposed to be funny, but it really wasn't. But I'm absolutely with you there, Kenny. What do they do with Strowman? It was clear when you look back at WrestleMania last year that they didn't really know what to do with him there either. So... I don't know. He's in a difficult spot right now. In a way, he's sort of had a reprieve because he's not going to lose to Lesnar. But what's next? You know, where do they go with him? I don't know. It's a tough one.
It'll be interesting to see. So up next, we had Ronda Rousey teaming with Sasha Banks to take on Nia Jax and Tamina. It was a 10-minute match. It was decent. And, you know, the story of it was really that Sasha Banks is... really kind of getting some featuring again to get ready for this Royal Rumble match. She ends up fighting her way out of the heel corner and putting Tamina in the bank statement at the end for the win. And then post-match, Charlie Caruso interviews them and Ronda says that it'll be an honour to team with, it's been an honour to team with Sasha, and a win over Sasha would be the greatest accomplishment that she's had as champion. Sasha takes offence to this and Rousey said, you know, I don't mean all of that, you know, I mean it with respect, you know, and with respect, I'll do everything I can to tap you out of the Rumble. And Sasha kind of says, you know, you know, you think you're the only person who can tap people out. I'll face any woman, any size, any place, anywhere. It'd be my pleasure to teach you how to lose with class. And Rousey told her she can keep the title of world's classiest loser because she didn't want it. Rousey then kind of regrets it. Banks gets in her face and said Rousey will be the loser at the Rumble when she taps out and takes her title back. And Sasha leaves. Rousey tries to go after her. And there's dissension between the two of them. What did you make of, you know, last week they kind of gave Sasha her moment to kind of get back in the picture, and they're now teasing this dissension. Did it work for you? What did you make of it?
It didn't really work for me. No. Why would Sasha Banks act offended when Ronda Rousey would say that she was going to tap her out in the match? Why would Sasha Banks take offense to that? I don't get why she would take offense to that. That is the purpose of a wrestling match, isn't it? Is for two people to go in the ring and one of them to beat the other. So, and then afterwards, Rousey's like, oh, I didn't mean to upset you. And, you know, then Rousey tried to apologize and like, oh, we're big pals here. I just thought it was cringe factor 10. And it sort of feels too little too late for this match now. What are they going to do next week? They really needed to be at each other's throats here, I felt. And Sasha Banks needed a strong showing here. She obviously got the strong showing in the sense in that she scored she got the tap out on Tamina Snuka. Didn't really find her performance to be that convincing in the match. Don't feel that Banks is very good on the mic. Thought this was really a mediocre performance at best by her. Admittedly, she was given bad material to work with because it didn't make any sense, this whole segment. I mean, the only good thing I can say about it is it led us backstage to Bailey and Natalya getting involved. Then the Riot Squad turned it up. Well, that wasn't a good thing because, you know, it's the never end. But at least that then led to the debut or the arrival of Nikki Cross. So at least something good did come from that. But as for Rousey versus Sasha Banks, this made me less interested in their match than I was before it took place.
I mean, I think the trouble is that they've kind of got to come up with a story in 2 weeks of what you're going to get, and it's going to kind of feel hollow whatever you do. But, you know, I mean, the thing that they've got going for them is that I think this is Sasha's moment to really show what she's got at Royal Rumble, And, you know, if you look at some of the most famous matches in wrestling, like, I mean, Rock and Hogan at WrestleMania 18, nobody talks about how terrible the story was for that, you know, because Hogan's supposed to be the heel and then he tries to run over The Rock with an ambulance. But nobody remembers that because they remember the match. So I think...
Well, I remember it, Kenny.
Well, not for the right reasons, but you know, most people do not remember the story. They just remember the match was really good. So,
no, I mean, the amusing thing about that was the fact that they used, you know, two ambulances. That was the funny thing. but I get your point entirely, yeah, that it's remembered for the match, not for the events that led to it. And you're right, if Sasha and Ronda Rousey have this amazing match, no one will remember the events that led to it. I just felt that they should have really been going at it here. Maybe we'll get that on Monday. And maybe people would say, well, you needed this segment here to get us from where we're at now to where we're going to go. But I thought it could have been presented very differently to this.
Yeah, no, I think that you're right. I mean, Sasha was kind of given this material of she had to seem annoyed when there wasn't really anything to seem annoyed about.
Yeah.
Which was problematic. But I think Rousey continues to be pretty good in her role. I liked the one line that I thought did kind of hit a wee bit was, you know, the line about, you know, I'll teach you how to lose with class. And Rousey saying, you know, if you want to keep the title of world's classiest loser, because that's kind of been the story of their careers, right? Because Rousey's famous for not being a good loser.
Yeah.
And Sasha's kind of famous now for being somebody who loses a lot and, you know, cries a lot. And that's really all she does. And if you know, if you watch her in NXT, we often kind of champion that Brooklyn match from 2015 with Bayley. You know, she has more to offer. She definitely does have it somewhere in her. So hopefully, I mean, in a Royal Rumble match in front of 40,000 people with Ronda Rousey, you know, that is, you're being handed it on a plate to deliver. So I think she will. I think she will deliver on the night. But I agree with you. It wasn't the best thing in the world, but I don't think it was anywhere near as bad as some of the stories they've tried to tell with the women in the last year. It was just kind of there.
That's not much of a compliment, is it?
I'm trying. We got a bunch of people waiting outside Vince's office. Heath Slater, Rhino, the B-Team, Curt Hawkins and Apollo Crews. But Jerry Lawler just comes out just in time for No Way Jose to lead his conga dance right in front of him. But Bayley and, like you said, Bayley and Natalya were standing between Sasha and Rousey trying to kind of stop them. And then the Riot Squad show up. So it's going to be Natalya and Bayley with a partner that they find against the Riot Squad. Then we got the Revival beating the Lucha House Party in like 4 minutes. I guess it goes back to kind of what you were saying earlier about the Revival. It just kind of feels like too little too late.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the revival getting a win over the Lucha House Party is all very well and good, but the Revival have already had to lose to them 3 times in the past.
Yeah, they're just treading water. It's like, where's it going? And the problem with the Revival, I mean, this was one of the few matches on the show that really didn't have much heat from the audience. There wasn't an atmosphere there. And this was a really good crowd. Fans were into nearly everything that was delivered on this program. But I mean, you know, you've got these guys who, I know you don't like Kalisto. I get that. But I mean, these guys do have something to offer. But this feud has so played out. It's not taking anyone anywhere. There's nothing at stake. Why should anyone care? I mean, the matches that really aren't that good. And we've seen it all before. I mean, you go back and look at what the Revival were doing in NXT and you contrast it with what they've done mostly in WWE. And it's a tragedy, isn't it, really, Kenny?
Yeah, it's a shame because, you know, I think that the compliment to the Revival for me would be, I've always said I'm more about characters than wrestling. And that's always really been my thing. But the Revival are one of the only teams that have kind of been able to win me over, and it's more for the wrestling. You know, I remember being there live in Dallas for the American Alpha Revival match, you know, at the first takeover of WrestleMania weekend, and it felt like the first great tag team match I'd seen in WWE in so long. So
yeah.
It's just a shame that they, you know, when they came to the main roster, one of them got injured very quickly, and then one came back, and then the other one got injured for a while.
That's right.
And you know, I think that hurt them a fair amount. But you know, still, when they came back, I mean, because they had that match, was it against Roman and was it Roman and Seth? Or Roman and somebody. They had a match when there was rumours that Vince had liked the match or whatever, but...
Yes.
I can't remember who it was against.
I can't remember who it was against either, but it was... They had a really good match. I think it was Roman and Seth, but I can't remember either.
Shows you remember what it says.
And it isn't that... And that there, the fact that neither you nor I, who do have generally good memories for this kind of thing. We were just talking a moment ago about Rock and Hogan and two ambulances being used and an angle that took place, what now, 17 years ago? We can remember that. Mm-hmm. The fact that we can't remember whoever the Revival had that good match with just tells you how bloody memorable the Revival has become. And that is them to a T. They have become an act that doesn't matter. And you don't feel like you need to retain memories of anything they do. Just tried to bail us out of that mess there, Kenny. I don't know whether I did a good job or not.
I think you did. Let's move on. We're out of it. During the match, we did see an appearance from EC3 backstage, so he's kind of there. We'll talk a little bit later on about how the use of NXT talent has been put over Raw and SmackDown, but we get Vince... Dasha Fuentes trying to get a word with him, but he's going to come out to the ring. So Vince comes out, and just as he's about to speak... and tell us, I guess, who's going to be facing Lesnar at the Royal Rumble. John Cena's music hits to the delight of Finn Martin. Cena comes out and he tells Vince that, he's there to tell him that he's there to step up. You know, Austin left, Rock left. Lesnar went to play football. Cena's the guy that stayed. He said that Vince begged someone to step up, and he looked at Vince in the eye and said he wouldn't let him down. Give me a chance, Vince. I will not let you down. He said he would beat Brock and become a 17-time champion, and it's because he has ruthless aggression, which is a good callback. Then we just hear Drew McIntyre comes out, no, 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 no. He doesn't care about Cena's movies or whatever books he's writing, but how dare you stand in this ring and claim that you still have ruthless aggression, and pointed at himself and said to Vince, this is what ruthless aggression looks like. And Drew said that Cena's time is up and Drew's time is now. This brought out Baron Corbin, which was kind of laughable, saying that he's not the type of guy to have a lawyer on speed dial, but he indicated it would be in Vince's best interest to give him the title shot. And finally, this brings out Finn Balor, who says he's the only person in the ring who's been Universal Champion. Vince said, you know, maybe he would be again someday. You know, he's got tremendous speed and he has it all, but, you know, he questioned whether Finn's the right guy to face Lesnar. Balor says, you know, that Vince has never believed in him, but the people believe in him. Balor said that Vince is stubborn and he knows he can't change his mind, so he'll show him. So Balor starts attacking Corbin. McIntyre ends up laying out Balor and Cena. So Vince books a four-way for the main event of the show, Cena, McIntyre, Balor and Corbin, in a four-way to determine who's going to face Lesnar at the Royal Rumble. I thought this was a really hot segment with some really good mic work and really good lines. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it was a really good segment. I enjoyed it. Finn Balor was the star of the show here. That was the whole emphasis was on that. As you said, Balor stated to Vince was saying to Finn, well, yeah, you're good talent. But look at all this beef in the ring. You know, look at all these, the size in the ring. You don't have that. So that was something he really emphasized there. And Balor had the line where he said, Vince, let's be honest. You never believed in me, but you hear that. Pointing to the crowd, these people do, and the fans finally responded. So I thought that was a really good line from Balor there. And we know that's true as well, that Vince has, over the last 18 months, has not been somebody who has felt that Finn Balor is top card material. I mean, the original plan was that Finn Balor was going to face Brock Lesnar at Royal Rumble last year. I believe that's correct, Kenny.
Yeah, that's right. It was going to be Balor and Lesnar, and then Vince changed his mind and made the three-way with Strowman, Kane and Lesnar instead.
Yes. So when talent are coming out and are using lines that lots of the audience know are true, that resonates a lot more. I mean, that really... that, to me, is when pro wrestling is at its best, when the blurring the line between fantasy and reality. So I thought that did a really good job there doing that. And as you say, they had the brawl there. Drew laid everyone out and Vince announced the fail four-way to name Lesnar's opponent at Royal Rumble. So yeah, I enjoyed the segment. I thought it was very well done. I wouldn't say it was massively obvious who was going to win from this segment, but I think... after we saw a match a little bit later before the fatal four-way, then it became more obvious where this was all going. You know, the signpost was up. They kind of telegraphed the outcome, but that was all right because it was the outcome that lots of us wanted. You know, yeah. Something new, something different. And let's face it, we've been crying out for that for how long? Months.
Yeah, I want to praise Cena for his mic work. I want to praise Drew for his mic work. I don't really want to praise Baron Corbin because he didn't really feel like he... But, you know, at the end of this segment, you kind of felt like Drew or Cena or Balor could all win this match. I mean, nobody in the ring meant Luke Corbin.
I didn't think Cena was going to win. You could see. I mean, Cena's mic work was just not convincing to me. I mean, you can see the fans don't believe in him as a top... I mean, they know he's a top guy. But they see him as a part-timer, which is what he is. And I don't think he's really got that connection there anymore, certainly on promos. But, you know, he played his part. You know, he was there to do the job, basically, and he did that.
And, you know, they had realistic lines because he is the guy that stayed when everybody else left. I like that they brought that in. And can you call back to the ruthless aggression thing? It was more interesting to me than a standard Cena promo. And I like Drew coming out and shutting him down and using his lines against him, like, you know, your time is up and my time's now.
That was a good one.
Then we get Vince talking to somebody backstage when Jinder Mahal showed up and said he was honoured to be in his presence, but, you know, he's disappointed he's not in the number one contenders match. And Vince ends up saying, well, if you think you can face Lesnar, you'll pick any man from the four-way, and if you can beat them, you'll replace him. So Mahal selected Finn Balor. And at this point, I guess, we began to get a sense of what we hoped would happen. And that's wrestling at its best when they telegraph it and then you get the outcome you want and you're not swerved, bro.
The stacking the odds against the face.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's something that it's a WWE tradition. And we root for the guy more who overcomes the odds. The underdog.
The underdog. So we see the Riot Squad taking on Bayley, Natalya, and their mystery partner that is Nikki Cross. She comes out, pretty good reaction, very over with the crowd, and she ends up performing a neck breaker on Liv Morgan, and then Bayley does a top rope elbow drop and pins her. So, you know, successful debut for Nikki Cross on Raw, gets the win along with Bayley and Natalya. And the crowd
would have been nice if Nikki had scored the pin.
It would have, yeah. But she got a good reaction. She did pretty well in the match. And people, I was surprised at how much the audience bought into her. Because, you know, a lot of times when the NXT people come up, there's not really a huge reaction unless you're at like a, you know, night after WrestleMania or night after SummerSlam crowd. But they gave it a pretty good reaction. So I was happy enough with her debut.
She got the best reaction of anyone in that match. And I believe a big part of the reason for that was because... Firstly, because she's so animated and is talented, as we know. But secondly, because she was something different, you know, in a scenario that we have seen umpteen times. So it was a big advantage for her. As I said earlier, you know, this match was actually a good thing for her because the match is so stale and, you know, we've seen it endless numbers of times. You just don't need to see this match again. But because there was a new element to the match, that's what people were responding to. So that was certainly to the advantage of Nikki Cross.
Then we see Finn Balor walking backstage. He stops when he notices that Dana Brooke and Mickey James are talking to Lacey Evans. So another cameo for one of the NXT call-ups. Should make mention that we did not get any mention or update of Lars Sullivan on the show. It was written in the Observer this morning that there's nothing new on Sullivan. He is at home. The company had apparently been supportive of him and want him to come back whenever he's ready. But, you know, if he doesn't come back soon, you know, it's kind of baffling that, you know, you're being handed potentially a huge program straight out the gate and you're not taking it. You know, how many guys would kill to, you know, debut on Raw in a convincing manner and be, you know, given a push. So I hope that he can overcome whatever odds he's, or whatever things he's going through and be able to come up. But
the thing is, he really needs to be there next week. If they're gonna use him, the Rumble, obviously, or anything that's sort of WrestleMania related that is meaningful, he needs to come back next week. Maybe he could suggest to WWE, as you suggested last week, Kenny, that maybe he's just booked into the Andre the Giant Battle Royal rather than in a singles match, just to you know, eliminate any nerves that she might that he might have.
Slow build.
The slow build, yeah, rather, because I think once he's made a couple of appearances, that nervousness should fade once he becomes accustomed to his new environment and the workplace and everything. Maybe it was just, you know, the thought of this big program with Cena that's just set him off. I'm not sure.
So it's a lot. It's a lot. It's a lot of pressure, you know, because Cena's a guy who I know you're not fond of him, right? But Cena's a guy who I think can be useful, and set, you know, the Becky Lynch thing he did a couple weeks ago was useful. On this show, he definitely was a help to Finn Balor. But, you know, Cena's not someone who can come in now, and he never really was the sort of guy to lead a match. You know, he was never that guy. So, I mean, there's an extra pressure there for Lars Sullivan, because Lars Sullivan's not a, you know, seasoned performer. So,
I mean,
I
think he's better than people give him credit for. I mean, I've watched a lot of his matches in NXT. I know the NXT audience is not a fan of him in the same way they were not fans of Elias, because I think they see him as a Vince-type wrestler rather than an NXT-type wrestler. I think that's the reason why. I mean, if you go back and look at the match that he was in last year for the North American title, he was the one that was booed more than anyone else. And that was not because he's over as a heel. It was because people sort of resent him and didn't want him to be champion. But I think Lars Sullivan is a pretty good performer.
But there's a difference between being a good performer when you're in NXT to then, you know, going up to the main roster. It's like, okay, Cena's going to come back and have one match. It's with you.
But the thing is with Lars Sullivan, when he gets into WWE, Kenny, he's going to do less. He's going to do fewer moves. He's not going to do the complicated matches that he did in NXT. Vince is going to look at him and he's going to have flashbacks to the 60s and the 70s, to the performers that Bruno and Bob Backlund beat, and he'll kind of be booking him as a slightly more, obviously, a modern version of that. But I think he'll do the big killer moves. He'll look into the camera. I mean, Lars, to me, he's got a great entrance, the whole way that they do the silhouette of him. I think his music's really good. I mean, he obviously looks as intimidating as hell. He's somebody that can have a program with Braun Strowman that'll give Strowman something to do for 3 months. So there's lots of things that he can do in this company that I think can be meaningful. But as far as putting him in there with Cena and having a match at WrestleMania, I would think he'd be going in there probably to defeat Cena fairly quickly. And after Cena's lost to The Undertaker last year, Cena, if he's going to do anything at WrestleMania this year, it needs to be something that's going to last more than 2 or 3 minutes. I think people would just be very upset. Well, if he's not being used in a match that's a lengthy match, that's a, you know, marquee match. I mean, I know the Cena versus Undertaker match was a marquee match, but it was over in, was it less than 2 minutes? Was it about 90 seconds the match lasted?
I think it lasted about 2.5 minutes.
2.5 minutes, right, okay. So it was a very short match anyway. But for me, Lars Sullivan is somebody who can be a star in WWE because he's the sort of person that Vince understands. He knows how to book him. He knows how to feature him.
I think you should just give Lars Sullivan a call, because I think if he heard this speech, he'd be fine. But I'm just trying to say, I think, knowing a lot of people, you know, we both know a lot of people in life who have anxiety.
Sure,
of
course.
And it can be crippling, you know. And I think that for him, he's not thinking of what you're saying. He's thinking the pressure of going into WrestleMania. He knows how hated he was in NXT because he wasn't the worker that everybody seems to want him to be. And, you know, I'm guilty of that as well. I wasn't a huge fan of him in NXT either. So, but I think that he's probably in his own head about it. And yeah. I hope that he gets out of it, because, you know, getting a chance to have your, you know, go up in the main roster and have a, and you know, beat Cena potentially on a WrestleMania is not something that comes along every day. In fact, there's nobody who's been able to come up to the main roster and do that. You know, Cena has famously, we've talked about before, the matches he's had at WrestleMania with younger guys, with Rusev and Bray Wyatt and those kind of guys, you know, they've not fared well. So,
no.
But now Cena's at a point where, whether it's that he's secure enough with himself finally, or WWE finally see that, you know, now's the time to start kind of beating him.
Yeah.
You know, I just hope Lars Sullivan is able to kind of get his stuff together and do it, because I think that it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and if you don't take it now, I'm not too sure that opportunity is going to come up again.
I agree. Yeah, I mean, you say that WWE is supporting him, and I'm sure they are. But if he doesn't feel that he can participate in a big match program at WrestleMania, he's gonna get that stigma of somebody that they cannot depend upon, and the push will go elsewhere. And it's possible that he may get another push somewhere down the line. It's possible that will happen. He could be a Glenn Jacobs who gets chance after chance because he's massive and looks the part. Or they might just say, hold on, we need to just invest our time and resources elsewhere because we cannot waste any more valuable time on this guy who's flaky or whatever. I mean, and that might sound harsh, and sure it does. I absolutely support Lars Sullivan. I hope he gets it together. And as I've said, I think he can be somebody in WWE. I'm not saying he's going to be Universal Champion, but I think he's somebody that could be booked as a opponent for Brock Lesnar, for instance. I think they could definitely do a big match on a big show, because people, once if Lars gets over and if Lars comes in there and he's convincing, which I believe he is as a performer, that's a match that Vince would book. You know, Brock Lesnar versus Lars Sullivan. That is a match that I think can, you know, be on a big show. But if the guy cannot, if the company can't depend upon him, it's not going to push him. It's that simple.
Yeah, so I guess we'll see if he turns up next week and what happens. So then we saw Finn Balor taking on Jinder Mahal. It went about nine and a half minutes, which is about 9 minutes too long. And Finn Balor wins with the coup de grace. I think what was good about it was that, and whether this was deliberate or not, this kind of highlighted what has been wrong with Finn Balor's career for the last year, is that he just beats Jinder and Corbin fairly regularly, and that's all that he does. So the idea that that was the roadblock that was put ahead of him, which has kind of been his roadblock for a year, and that he beat it again, was kind of a nice irony. But I did not need it to be as long as it was, but I think that the purpose of it was good, and the fans were very much behind him and were, you know, wanting him to win. So it worked in that respect. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it worked really well. I thought it was a good performance from Jinder. He had an extraordinary amount of offense, which just shows you again, like Corbin, Mahal is somebody that they like and that they're going to continue to push to some degree, I think, for the foreseeable future. So it was a good night for Mahal as well, getting the segment there with Vince McMahon and then getting a match with Finn Balor, in which he controlled the bulk of the offense. Finn Balor came from behind to win. They mentioned the match in Blackpool on Saturday, and that he was probably, you know, jet lagged and tired from that, and that could have been a factor in why Mahal was on offense for so long, was so dominant in the match. So I thought it was a really good match overall for everyone. I think Mahal and Balor benefited from this.
Then we got Leo Rush coming out to cut a promo on behalf of his man Lashley, where he was, you know, basically saying he's going to be IC champion and all that kind of stuff. And then Seth Rollins had an interview as well, saying, you know, this could be his, you know, he's going to make the most of his last title shot by kicking Ambrose's teeth in his throat. Pretty decent promo by Rollins, which leads us to Ambrose, Rollins, and Lashley in a triple threat match for the IC title. They go about 13 minutes or so. And in the end, you know, Rollins is, you know, trying his best. He's popping back up and super kicking both guys. He runs the ropes, but Leo Rush held the top rope down. Rollins tumbles to ringside, and then Lashley spears and pins Ambrose to win the Intercontinental title. Bobby Lashley is the new Intercontinental champion. And I think 2 weeks ago, I would have been like, Bobby Lashley, Intercontinental champion. I don't know if I'm for it. But at the end of it, I kind of thought, yeah, I think maybe put the belt on him, see what he can do with it. What did you think?
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, Kenny. I mean, the whole presentation of Lashley, and particularly Leo Rush over the last few weeks, there's been a big shift. It's a lot more serious. It's not comical anymore. I thought the promo that Leo Rush did for Lashley in the locker room was something that this was what they should have been doing from the start with Leo Rush and Lashley. And this was the direction I thought they were going to go with from the start, instead of doing, you know, with Leo Rush being the cheerleader at ringside and distracting people from Lashley, and then all the poses and things like that. this is the Lashley this company needs, and the Intercontinental title needs as well. I thought it was nice that they mentioned that it had been, I think it was 11 years since Lashley had last held a title in WWE. I think they said it was 11 years. They'd mentioned that he'd never held the Intercontinental title before and that he wanted to win the belt. So they kind of telegraphed the outcome there. Also, with Lashley being so dominant on Raw last couple of weeks, this felt like, you know, this felt like the right direction for him, and certainly the right direction for the title. The big loser here, of course, was Dean Ambrose, who now seems lost. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do next, Kenny. I mean, the Rollins feud is obviously over. I mean, Rollins, it seems, is going to be directed at Lesnar after Raw Rumble. You know, that's his route forward. I'm not sure what Dean Ambrose does next. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, Ambrose in a difficult spot, because I think we all thought when Ambrose turned heel it was going to be this great thing. And I don't know whether the Roman Reigns stuff is that big of an issue. I mean, I know a lot of people did not like it, but something's not clicking with Dean Ambrose as a heel, and I don't know what it is. I thought it was going to be just this, you know, oh, he turns heel, it's going to be great. It's just not worked.
He's just stalled, hasn't he? There's been no growth. It's like he's like got to second gear, and it's like it's going to be a slow, steady progression or you know, a huge acceleration. It just hasn't happened for him.
Because he's changed his look. He's done things to try and, you know, be different, you know, whether it's the gas mask or trying different bits and pieces. I think what maybe hurt it was that when they had that match at TLC, Rollins and Ambrose, that was going to be the match. And then it was really boring. And yeah. I think that put a lot of people off. And I do not know what you do with Ambrose. And I think this hurts Ambrose a lot, because as a, you know, I think him as a heel, that could have been a main event player thing for him. And instead it's, you know, he's getting the IC title taken off him and given to Lashley. And, you know, Lashley, someone who a month ago was just, who cared?
Yeah.
And the fact that Lashley's now a little bit hotter than Ambrose is really tells you all you need to know.
Well, it does, yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, Lashley is the guy who's accelerating and Ambrose is decelerating right now. I mean, I fully agree. I'm in full agreement with you. The TLC match should have been this, you know, brutal grudge match where they were trying to tear each other apart. And it was just sort of mediocre. And then there was the match with Apollo Crews. That was the match that really put me off Ambrose and made me... I mean, I was thinking to myself, is Ambrose... has it been smoke and mirrors? You know, have I been seduced by the hype for Ambrose? Have I not been able to see who this guy really is? And that match with Apollo Crews on Raw a couple of weeks ago was just lousy. And to me, it was one of Ambrose's worst performances, probably his worst performance since the Lesnar match at WrestleMania a couple of years ago.
Yeah, it's I mean, at this time of the year, I always kind of think, right, what are people going to be doing at WrestleMania? And it does not look good for Ambrose right now.
It does
at
not.
All. You know, is he going to end up in the Battle Royal? You know, that's you think that's mad to say, but I just don't know if he's going to end up any higher. So
yeah, I mean, he only recently turned heel, so they can't turn him face again. He's presented as a loner. So again, the tag team route is difficult. So, you know, what's he going to do? Who would trust him? He's in a difficult spot. He's kind of like Braun Strowman. He's in a, you know, what, where's, how does he progress from here?
Then we got a crew member was trying to take a coffee to Alexa Bliss's locker room. When she didn't answer, the guy entered the room and she was topless but holding a top over her chest. And you had checked the... because obviously there's a bit more sexualization of the product right now. You know, they had that, they had the Mandy Rose thing on SmackDown. I guess, A, how do you feel about it? And B, fill people in on... because I've got the numbers for the SmackDown segment, but you've got the numbers for the Raw segment on YouTube. How many numbers did the Alexa Bliss segment do?
Well, as of this morning, on January 17th, it done 4.6 million. And if you look at the thumbnail, it's, you know, designed to imply that you may see something. And of course, you're not going to see anything because it's PG. I mean, it's, to me, it felt gratuitous. It just, It was not convincing. It kind of reminded me of the stuff they did with Trish Stratus in sort of 2000, 2001. The reaction in the arena was, it's kind of a muted reaction. Had this taken place in the Attitude Era, there would have been like, you know, huge cheers. And this was not greeted by huge cheers in the venue. And yet it's received, as of this morning, 4.6 million views on YouTube. So people are obviously into it, or at least some people out there are, or many people out there are. I mean, I don't really object to it, Kenny. I know some people are saying it's a step backwards, and I guess it is. But I mean, it's still pretty tame compared to things they've done in the past.
Well, my take on it is, I actually liked, it wasn't well acted, but I actually liked the Mandy Rose, Jimmy Uso, and Naomi thing. It just felt a little bit different. You know, they were trying something different. And the judge to me that it was effective was, at the end of it, I wanted to see Naomi beat up Mandy Rose.
Yeah. You know,
and I didn't want to see that before. My issue, I mean, and it's become this kind of like, you know, this issue with these two segments has now become like, you know, a feminism thing and a kind of, you know, step back for women's wrestling. To me, Alexa Bliss, and in her current role, and Mandy Rose generally, you know, Mandy Rose has always been a sexualized character.
Yeah.
Alexa Bliss has kind of used that in her character in the past. So to me, if these segments were taking place with like Becky Lynch or Ronda Rousey or Charlotte, who are the top main event level players, I'd probably have a problem with it. But I don't really, if it's these kind of secondary characters who, you know, the Alexa Bliss one I thought was just a bit silly. It didn't really hit for me. It didn't offend me. But, you know, the Mandy Rose segment with Jimmy Uso and Naomi, as of this morning, had over 2 million hits on YouTube.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a lot of hits. And, you know, sex does sell in some ways. And for me, as long as it's not in a way that is demeaning a woman or making her feel like she's worthless or anything like that, then I don't have a problem with it. I mean, to me, it's what they really should do is sexualize some men so it's more equal. You know, like, I mean, you know, I mean, if you go on Finn Balor's Instagram, it's just all about his abs the whole time. So, yeah, you know, do something like that with a guy. You know, I just think that when you start going, you know, women have come so far in sports and all that kind of stuff that, you know, now there are some women who are quite sexual, and they enjoy being that way. And the Mandy Rose character, she has porn music. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's been it since the beginning. So I know it doesn't hit for everybody. The Alexa Bliss one didn't really hit for me. I liked the Mandy Rose segment. But yeah, I mean, I don't think people need to worry about the Attitude Era coming back. It's not.
No.
They're trying some different stuff. And I don't know. I guess we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, I, with the Alexa thing, it just felt like it was like a random thing that was inserted for the purpose, clearly, of drawing views on YouTube when it was put on there. And, the thumbnail picture of Alexa there holding something over a chest, it just says it all. So it didn't really seem to exist for a purpose to further a storyline like the Mandy Rose segment in the hotel room did. So there was a huge difference between the two. But, I mean, I don't... It still feels very tame compared to things they've done in the past. That's where I stand on it.
So then we got Alexa Bliss coming out for her her segment. She said that three teams from Raw and three teams from SmackDown will compete inside the Elimination Chamber match in 5 weeks in Houston to become the first ever WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. She unveiled the new belts. They looked pretty good. And apparently these belts are going to be over both divisions, which I think is a smart move.
We learned that, didn't we, on SmackDown the following night?
Yep, so she then tries to introduce Paul Heyman, but he interrupts her and comes out himself. You know, she asks him what his emotions are regarding the four-way. Heyman said, you know, that doesn't play a part. It's the strategy. You can line up all four of the top challengers. Lesnar would eat through them all individually or en masse. Praised Drew, said that he's almost guaranteed to be a Universal Champion, just not now. He said he'd save Corbin for last, that he's not the most popular guy. And then suddenly Otis Dojovic of Heavy Machinery comes out, yelling. His partner Tucker Knight comes out and tries to talk him into returning backstage, and he leaves with some help from Adam Pearce and a referee. And that's the appearance of Otis Dojovic. this is kind of divided opinion. Some people just like, oh, it was terrible. It was one of the worst segments ever. Some people aren't bothered by it. Some people enjoyed it. Where do you sit with this segment?
I mean, the Otis thing, he kind of reminded me of one of the Bushwhackers when he came out. It's like, well, why is he there? And it was quite funny where he was stood there and it took a little while before Alexa and Heyman realised he was there. So there was some amusement that they kept going. It was only when the response changed in the arena that they looked behind them and saw Otis there. I thought it was strange to me to see Paul Heyman in a frivolous segment like this. It just seemed ridiculous. And I mean, I don't really have a huge problem with it. I mean,
they've run out of ideas for Heyman and Lesnar, haven't they? My God.
Yeah. I mean, probably the most interesting thing in the segment was Heyman's comments about Drew McIntyre. Did he mention that he could potentially see himself associating himself with Drew in the future? Did he say that, or am I just making that up?
I think you're just wanting that to happen.
Yeah, I think that's wishful thinking. And I think it is wishful thinking, actually, yeah. And I was thinking to myself, yeah, Paul Heyman and Drew McIntyre, that could be a winning team. So that was the most interesting thing that came out of this to me.
So the main event is John Cena, Drew McIntyre, Finn Balor and Baron Corbin in a four-way for the number one contendership match for the Universal title. I was watching this live and I didn't realise how much I wanted Finn Balor to win until I was watching it. I was really biting for the falls. You know, I think they did a really good job in the second half of the match to have people doing their finishes, and everybody in the match looked like they wanted to win it, which was good. You know, and towards the end, McIntyre gives Cena a Claymore kick. Balor does a tornado DDT on Drew. He goes up top and performs a coup de grace on Cena, and he covers Cena clean, 1-2-3, to win the match and go on to the Royal Rumble to face Brock Lesnar for the Universal title. We get a graphic showing up, and then Cena takes the mic and says, you know, where he comes from, when you're confronted, you fight and earn respect. And, you know, Vince might not believe in you, but he does, along with these people. Shook his hand, raises his hand, and exits while Finn Balor celebrates to close the show. This was the Finn Balor show, and I am very, very happy for him because, you know, I interviewed him on Friday at the launch of the Performance Center. I interviewed him Friday morning, very early. So he was there, and he'd flown over, did that on Friday. Then he made his takeover appearance at Saturday. Then he flew to Raw, then did two matches in one night. So, you know, he's putting in the shift here.
He certainly is. He's showing the company what he's made of, that he's a guy that's going to do what's necessary and what's asked. He's somebody that's, you know, he's a Marine. He's solid. He's somebody they can depend upon. Good performances in all of those matches. Good performance on the mic as well. This is what we've wanted for Finn Balor for so long. Listen, the heel turn, of course, and maybe we can expect that after he loses to Lesnar. I was really pleased with the outcome here. It was the right thing to do at the right time. So mission accomplished. Really impressed. Really impressed. You know, I'm looking forward to the match as well with Lesnar. I mean, we've seen Lesnar have the match with AJ Styles. It was a really good match. He had the match with Daniel Bryan at Survivor Series last year, which again was, I think, was even better than the Styles match. I thought that was superb, the match with Bryan. I think Lesnar can have a match that's equally as good with Finn Balor, if not better. Because Lesnar knows how to work with these guys, and Finn Balor can do so many different things. One of the things that I really enjoyed seeing Balor do at the takeover event in Blackpool, I realize I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here, was doing the proper selling in the match with Jordan Devlin, instead of the cartoon selling we often get on Raw. And when he's in there with Lesnar, he'll do that proper selling. And that's the stuff that really drags you into a match and makes you believe. So I'm really looking forward to the match. I think it's going to absolutely deliver on the night.
I mean, I don't know if this is just me being kind of... I mean, I am so excited for the Royal Rumble. They have got a card and a half for that show. You know, the Cruiserweight 4-way should be pretty good, which will probably end up in the pre-show. You know, the Shane and Miz, you know, we'll talk about SmackDown in the overrun, but the Shane and Miz bar match could be pretty fun. And then you've got these four big title matches. You know, you've got AJ and Bryan, Rousey and Banks, Becky and Asuka, and Balor and Lesnar. I mean, that's four main events, along with two Royal Rumble matches. So, I've got pretty high hopes for it.
Yeah, I have as well. I mean, on the main show, every match on that show should be good to very good. I mean, really, every match should be very good or better. Yeah. I mean, we know these people are going to want to perform because there aren't any people in this company that phone it in anymore. I mean, Lesnar on big shows, you can accuse him of doing that, but he won't phone it in this match. You know he's going to absolutely deliver. So I think all those matches are going to be really good. And the Rumbles last year were terrific. I think they'll be just as good this year. So, yeah, this has the potential, Kenny, to be the show of the year for WWE.
Yeah, and I guess my last question to you is, should Finn Balor be the demon to face Brock Lesnar, yes or no?
No, I think he should go in as Finn Balor. I think he comes in as the demon. It's just a different atmosphere. I don't think he needs it. You know, I think he puts the makeup on when he needs to bring something new to a performance. And the fact that he's never had a match with Lesnar means that he doesn't need to go down that route yet. There may be a rematch at some point in the future. I have no idea if there will be. But if there is, then that's the time for him to put the demon makeup on.
There you go. Interesting. I thought Raw this week overall was a pretty good show. I enjoyed it. One of the better Raws they've done in a while. And it's the first time in a few months, actually, that a lot of people have been really excited to hear us talk about it and to hear people talk about it, which is a good sign that we're starting 2019 with that kind of, audience reaction. So.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and that was reflected in the ratings as well. Raw was the spots 1 to 3 on the cable chat on Monday. Hour one did 2.775 million, hour two did 2.781 million, and hour three did 2.61 million. So pretty good numbers by current standards.
So that's going to be it for us in the main podcast right now. We're going to head off, and on the overrun we'll cover NXT UK TakeOver Blackpool, SmackDown, and a little bit about the UK Performance Centre. But Finn, I want to thank you again for your analysis.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for having me. And I just want to mention that I filed my second edition of What's Going Down to Inside the Ropes Patreon this week. So I hope you will all check that out. So I really enjoyed writing that. My plan is to make that a monthly feature, Kenny. So the next one will go up mid-February.
There you go. Lots of topics about NXT call-ups, about New Japan, NXT UK TakeOver Blackpool. Lots of stuff in there. I would urge you to check it out over on Patreon. $4 level where you get that, the overrun, this podcast 24 hours early, and much, much more. All for less than the price of a McDonald's meal. And plus, we won't make you have a heart attack. So, where can people find you online, Finn, if they want to say hi?
Yeah, they can find me at my website, finleymartin.co.uk, on Twitter at finleymartin. Where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me at KennyMC1985 or at inside_the_ropes. And you can also find tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk/tickets or go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/insidetheropes, for interview clips with Triple H, Charlotte, Finn Balor, and winners Pete Dunne and Zach Gibson and James Drake from this past weekend at TakeOver. Pretty proud of those interviews, so go check them out. And we will be back next week with more. So thanks for listening, everybody. Talk to you soon. If I'm sad tonight.